Okay, so.
Testing 1234, 1234. Interview with Bruce Stout, Stout, on June the 18th, starting at 11:19 a.m.
Perfect, thank you. So where did you travel from to attend Miners Memorial Weekend?
We traveled from North Vancouver to attend Miners Memorial.
Mm-hmm.
We, being seniors, BC seniors, were able to avail ourselves of the BC Ferry discount for seniors if you come on Thursday. We've actually stayed with relatives in the Comox area. But in past years, we've come up here and we've actually stayed at the Anchor Hotel, mm-hmm. which is in Comox.
Great.
My wife is the instigator of our coming up here. There was a gentleman quite many years ago, almost a decade ago, was the first time we came up here. And he was a former member of the Mine, Mill, and Smelter Workers Union. And he said, we're trying to get people to come up to the Ginger Goodwin Memorial and explain some of the history of who Ginger Goodwin was and the events of the time. So Susan said, we've got to go up there. So we drove up here probably a decade ago now to attend one of the early meetings. This gentleman has since, of course, died, and he won't be coming up anymore.
Okay, so that was your first Miners Memorial.
That was my first Miners Memorial. That's quite a lot. I'm guessing it's a decade ago at least.
Okay.
And I'm totally unaware of the history of Ginger Goodwin, who Ginger Goodwin was, what the events were all about that transpired here. And it's been interesting education because there's not a lot of history of workers' struggles in B.C. I mean, it wasn't something that was taught in high school at all. B.C. history was kind of light, and you see B.C. history from the standpoint of the people that write the history books.
And have you been coming to Miners Memorial Weekend ever since?
I've missed a couple, but, you know, when we're in town and when it works, we come up and do it. It was, Susan said this year she was coming regardless of whether I came, and I said, well, you know, if you couldn't find anybody else to drive up with you, I'll drive up with you. So.
And can you tell me about your most memorable experience here at the Miners Memorial Weekend?
Probably, I guess, the first time I came up here and didn't know what I was getting into, what it was all about, hearing the stories for the first time and thinking to myself, there's really not a lot of justice there. I mean, I'm really quite surprised that the person that was involved in shooting Ginger Goodwin lived to a ripe old age and eventually died a natural death. I'm kind of amazed that these things happen where people that do something like that more or less get away with it.
Were you involved in the labor movement at all?
Not at all, no. My wife was the person that was involved in the labor movement. I was only a union member for a very short period of time.
What union was that?
Oh, this would be I was working for a company called Kelly Douglas. And they had I was a member of the union for maybe about a month because it was a summer job. So after about a month, I joined the union because that was compulsory and that was it. It was my union exposure.
Have you been involved with any other kind of working class politics?
Really none whatsoever. The only exposure I have to union and union activity is through the annual meetings that happen at Unifor office, which was once Canadian Auto Workers, and I know a number of people that are there, and I hear what's going on and I hear some of the struggles.
Okay. What do you think is going to be the legacy of Miners Memorial Weekend for the future?
Well, hopefully the legacy of Miners Memorial Weekend is for people to understand some of the situations that have happened over the history of British Columbia. We're so fortunate right now where the accepted work week is 40 hours long, and in some cases it's 37 and a half. There's always a movement to roll that back, to get longer work weeks. Certainly if you're a self-employed person, your work week is a lot longer than 40 hours because you have to get the job done, and the only thing you've got to throw at it is time. If you're working for someone else, shouldn't be expected to put the same amount of hours in because, quite frankly, you don't function at a very high level at increased hours of work. So I really have a hard time understanding how people can function in jobs where they work three 12-hour days, because at the end of a 12-hour shift, you've got to be just exhausted. So I don't know how that works, but there's a lot of people that like to do that. Now, the other thing you have to understand, of course, your major cost of time is the hour it takes you to get to work and the hour it takes you to get back. So if you only do that 3 or 4 days a week, maybe that makes more sense. You have more time for your family. One of the other things that's happening with our society, and whether we realize it or not, a lot of jobs are becoming more and more automated. So as these jobs become more and more automated, the manual work that was necessary to get things done is starting to disappear. I mean, there's whole factories now that employ robots to make cars, and there isn't people doing it anymore. So what we need to do is start transitioning to a different kind of work. And that's one of our challenges is, you've got a very large population, and once upon a time that large population was essential to manufacture things, and now we're reaching a point where that large population isn't essential to manufacture things anymore. With the number of jobs that have gone offshore, we had a very vital automotive sector back in Eastern Canada, and now it's a shadow of its former self because a lot of those jobs have gone offshore. So, you know, the future is going to be quite interesting to see what happens to the labor movement as to how it's going to maintain itself and become relevant in a world where fewer and fewer jobs are going to be available.
So do you think that that's the main issue that's facing working people today?
Well, the main issue, one of the issues that's facing working people today, several issues facing working people today, one of the issues facing working people today is the coming change in work, and what work's going to be, what kind of work you're going to do. It's going to be more thought work than manual work. I understand in this particular town right now there is a building, and in that building is a bunch of computer programmers that are programming computer games. These people are fairly highly paid because they have a specific skill. So the future of labor, if you will, is highly skilled labor doing work that these particular people are capable of doing and no one else is capable of doing, and they're going to be well compensated for it. The future of unskilled labor is going to be unemployment. And that's one of the challenges you've got, because you can only need so many people to do manual, low-skilled jobs. And when that's filled, there's a huge void of those jobs. So smart people will get a trade, get a skill. They will pay attention in the schooling. They will seek enhancement to those skills, and they will do lifelong learning to make sure they're continuously employable. So the goal of successful employment is going to be finding something that somebody needs, being able to do it better than anybody else, and then you'll work for your entire life.
Do you think labor history matters today?
Absolutely it matters. If you don't know where you've come from, you don't know where you're going. So the advantage of a labor history, understanding the struggle, prevents you from having to do it again. So this is one thing we don't understand. If you look at the history, you'll see, well, wait a minute. 100 years ago, we were still fighting these same battles. We were still doing the same stuff. And then we go and do it again 20 years, 50 years.